Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind.
Oh, it was a grand and glorious gesture. And the war cry of the Texan after today will be, "Remember the Alamo." Brave words indeed from one of our heroes. But is history as we remember it? Or has it been manipulated? Just one of the questions we'll be putting to the team as we head into yet another Resonance Rewind in the paths of the time tunnel.
Two American scientists are lost in the swirling maze of past and future ages during the first experiments on America's greatest and most secret project, the time tunnel.
Troops do the Mexicans have?
And?
6,000 men.
Against how many in the Alamo?
About 180.
Not very good odds.
Well, is it, though? Are they very good odds? We've just heard Ray Swain, of course, uttering, "Not very good odds at all when you're up against the Alamo." Do we remember the Alamo? Or is it simply a case of, as we said right at the start, we need to really correct all of those problematic things? Imagine, for instance, if the United States were to open interior Alaska for colonization, and for whatever reason, thousands of Canadian settlers poured in, establishing their own towns, hockey rinks, and Tim Hortons stores. When the United States insists they follow American laws and pay American taxes, they refuse. When the government tries to collect taxes, they shoot and kill American soldiers. When law enforcement goes after the killers, the colonists, backed by Canadian financing and mercenaries, take up arms in open revolt. Now you can pretty much imagine how Mexican President Antonio López de Santa Anna would have felt in 1835, because that's pretty much the story of the revolution that paved the way for Texas to become its own nation. I can't believe that Irwin Allen could possibly have been playing fast and loose with Mexican history in this epic episode, The Alamo, with respect to obviously Tony and Doug, and of course the David Crockett hat, which is actually seen in certain ways, plus of course all those wonderful folk. But let's find out what the team think. Kathy Manso, The Alamo, were you drawn into this whole exploration of the events as they happened, as portrayed in 1968, going all the way back to the early 19th century?
So, the thing with this episode, I was invested before I even knew, because I know so much about it. I've studied it, I've read it, I've been there. Been there, done that. By the way, crazy that the Alamo is in the middle of San Antonio, like in the middle city center. So everyone just thinks it's like out in the desert. It's not. It's part of the community. But so I was excited to see this when it first started. And then I don't want to be too critical to the episode because there were moments that I was captivated in, but I don't think I was invested until the end. Like, it took the whole episode for me to make it to the end to be like, how could they put me on a cliffhanger like that? That's rude. Like, but I did not continue, you know. I stuck to the one episode so I wouldn't change my mind about it and how I felt throughout my journey.
Yeah, you don't want to jump to 19th century Asia and Mitch will be meeting Rudyard Kipling and other folk. I mean, that's for another experience. Look, and another resonance.
I'll
rewind.
Be honest, Alex. As a woman, most of the past is not a fun place for me to drop into. So as a white man, I bet it's a great time. I hear awesome things, but not me. I like this year. I'm at my most advanced, depending on what my state does, depending, can really go backwards.
Well, of course, the Alamo, the Precy, Doug and Tony, of course, Doug Phillips and Tony Newman transported back to 1836. And immediately attacked by Mexican soldiers. The nearest shelter turns out to be the Alamo, days before the Mexican army will overrun it. And Colonel Travis decides they are spies and imprisons them. I've got a confession before we go to Jenny Bill. I was so enthralled by this that I actually went and watched the John Wayne movie, The Alamo, and indeed the David Crockett movie as well. Now, it's one of those misnomers that they actually use stock footage from the John Wayne movie. A version of the Alamo, but with the Bible of the Time Tunnel to hand. Apparently, it was another movie that they actually took stock footage from. But, Jenny Bill, you're a keen Time Tunnel aficionado, you keen sort of follower of Tony and Doug. What did you make of this particular episode?
Yes, I am. I do like the Time Tunnel. And, I have to say that when I first watched it when I was maybe 7 or 8 years old, at a grand old age of 64, it's perhaps doesn't quite have the same appeal as it did then. This episode, I think if I was going to say to somebody, hey, there's this great TV series, we watch an episode, this would be one episode that I wouldn't recommend. And in fact, I'd go out of my way to make sure that they didn't see this episode, because I actually thought it was pretty awful. Not the acting. The acting was all absolutely fine, but to me the whole thing was so disjointed, poorly directed, and it just seemed to have not really a sort of wandering plot line, but not really anything. And then stupid things happening. I mean, the guy materializing in the time tunnel. Well, why didn't they just materialize Doug and Tony and be done with it? I mean, it was just, there were so many things about it that were poorly thought out. I know I've seen it before, but it's probably like 40 years ago that I last saw this episode, and I was very disappointed with it overall. I mean, I just thought it was like, it was as if they had all these fragments of footage and they just stuck them all together. So it's like he's outside, he's in a Mexican town, he's in here, he's there. It was just a sort of mishmash and definitely not one of the best.
Interesting. I mean, obviously we have wonderful lines such as, I can't decide whether you're a madman or a calculated troublemaker, Dr. Newman, but in any event, you are a danger to us. I felt actually maybe being a little bit harsh. I mean, I can echo those thoughts, Jenny, maybe 20 or so years ago when I watched it again for a time, and I did think it was a bit schlocky and so on. But somehow, Colonel Travis, of course... of course, we see the character of David Bowie or Bowie. It depends. They had various pronunciations of the name. Just, of course, David has lots of names. Is it Bowie, 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 etc.? I think Doug Bowie was very much one to actually say it's David Bowie. But
it's,
either way...
It's, I mean, Richard Widmark. It's actually Richard Widmark. There you go.
In, of course, the John Wayne movie, The Alamo, which we're not considering, to be clear, in terms of this, although we
this
will feature
in
the best Dimitri Tiomkin way and the best Owen Allen way, we will feature the soundtrack of the John Wayne movie, The Alamo, in this particular episode, because I think it's only right to actually have some additional stock footage within that. But, I mean, surely classic lines. I mean, Kathy, how could you actually knock a particular line which said, I never figured I'd be laid low by falling off a platform. It's my innards. They're on fire. I mean, you know, surely on that basis alone, you've got to say, you know, kudos and chops for the dramatization of that particular loss of Colonel Bowie or Bowie.
Yeah, Alex, I agree with you. But I think, you know, Jenny explained it perfectly. The acting is fine. Like, the interactions with people weren't the problem. It was the plot line. Like, I think what happened, and I think this happens a lot, and it's hard to execute, is they liked this concept of a very cool event in history, especially since the Alamo has a lot of mystery and myth that goes with it, which is even better for a TV show because they could literally do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. They can create any sort of plot line they want and just fall into the myth or mystery of it. I mean, 600 Mexicans died. Only 200 Americans died. Well, it depends on your definitions of Texans and Tejanos, but I digress. But, like, there's so much more interesting information about the Alamo. I mean, Davy Crockett mysteriously goes, like, we know he's dead, but we don't know how. No one knows what happened to him. You know, there's just so many cool elements of the Alamo. And they, although they came at a very critical part, it's like 30 minutes before it's about to go down. there's just so much they could have done. You know, and I think that was the letdown watching something like this, because I like a lot of history. I'm very good between anything from the 1700s to today. But, you know, and so with, and I've seen all versions of the Alamo on top of that, would recommend. But that's, I think it's just that it's like they were so close. They could have done something really interesting and cool, but instead it feels like an episode in a series where they kind of like, oh, let's talk about things from our past. Like the move along plot with no storyline, like in Friends, they like review, oh, do you remember what you said 5 years ago? That's what this episode felt like.
To cite the article I launched the program with, if it's not the version of history you're familiar with, the version most Americans know, the heroic Anglo narrative that's held sway for nearly 200 years. Of course, we are, I suppose, as 2036 approaches, looking for the bicentenary of the Alamo. It holds that American colonists revolted against Mexico because they were oppressed and fought for their freedom. William Travis apparently never drew any line in the sand. There was obviously because he was spending time actually dealing with the witchcraft of being taken up to the time tunnel in 1968. And there's also no evidence Davy Crockett went down fighting, as of course John Wayne did in the 1960 movie. We don't actually see Davy Crockett, incidentally, in this particular episode of the time tunnel. The argument, of course, that the battle should never have been fought because Travis ignored multiple warnings of Santa Anna's approach and was simply trapped in the Alamo when the Mexican army arrived.
Well, sorry, not to interrupt, but you know, historically, they had already, this wasn't a fight of independence. The independence was already won on the second. I believe this fought was on the sixth, and on the second it signed, but it couldn't reach San Antonio in time because it was too far away. So they didn't even know that they didn't need to be fighting to begin with, historically, as we know today. So it's a real bummer of a of a battle. But I like that ending. I like that concept that it's not like, oh, what a beautiful story of these Americans fighting for their last bit. It's like, look at the other side.
I mean, it is intriguing, and certainly the series, other shows we may well look at in the not-too-distant future, no pun intended, when Doug and Tony actually land slap-bang in the middle of General Custer's last stand at the Battle of the Little Bighorn. And indeed, prevent Abraham Lincoln from being assassinated in 1861 as opposed to 1865. Clearly, this is an adventure series. It's designed to a certain extent, play fast and loose in the way that only Owen Allen can with respect to history and so on. In terms of that, though, I mean, let's look at again. Once again, I think you have to say only two major female characters they've actually got. If you exclude the female in the Alamo played by Virginia Seaman, you have Mrs. Rainison, of course, the nurse or the acting nurse Elizabeth Rogers. And then, of course, Lee Merriweather as Dr. Anne McGregor. Again, of its time, originally produced back in 1966, looking ahead to the future of 1968. And written by Wanda and Bob Duncan, who were classic alumni of Owen Allen before. Do we feel it's the writing in this that affects it, Jenny? Or is it a case of, no, Sobey Martin has just basically become a lazy director?
I don't think the actual script, obviously, I think the acting, to me, the acting was all fine. I didn't even have really particularly an issue with the script, as in the written stuff that the actors were saying. To me, it was more just the whole package just seemed to be kind of disjointed. I just thought it didn't seem to be very well directed, and it just seemed to be very bitty. And there were sort of things that you thought, what was that, or what was going on? And it sort of jumped about a bit as well, you know. And I mean, Tony was in the village, then suddenly he's back in the Alamo. But and I know he jumped up on the wagon with the doctor, but you don't really know how far they have come. You know, to me, the idea of time and everything was a little bit was a little bit. Yeah, it was just sort of a bit disjointed, I felt. That was all really.
The irritant I sometimes have with the time tunnel is why it always seems to be exploding in every episode, because there are always lots of pyrotechnics and explosions, and you think they've blown it up again, but they still manage to get there. But let's not forget the
You actually
delights.
watch, it's always the same ones. There's one like that, and then there's a great big one just a little bit in the front. It's exactly the same ones every single
Yeah,
time.
but it's still problematic. You'd think that
It's
Ray
probably the
Swain
same
could have actually
stock
fixed that.
footage.
Or failing that, General Heywood Kirk or Anne McGregor. Let's not talk about Jerry, who doesn't really appear too much in this. Rhodes Reason, wonderful name. Brother, of course, of Rex Reason, also a very stoic actor. Rex Reason, his brother, starred in This Island Earth, which we haven't looked at as yet. But Rhodes Reason clearly plays William Travis in the line of obviously an officer and a gentleman. His word is his bond, and so on. Kathy, did you feel that the spirit of Travis was being epitomized by Rhodes Reason, or did you think what a wonderful name Rhodes Reason actually is?
I didn't know how to answer you. Well, okay. I agree with Jenny, where I think everyone who acted did well, although there were some comical deaths I did enjoy. But I think that was like kind of purposely. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that was too ridiculous. So I think there it there yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just not getting over the point of like, how did I go through almost an hour and I was paying attention and I was watching? I just wasn't like committed to any of the characters this time around, you know? And exactly as you pointed out earlier, Alex, there are barely any female leads. I will say though, everyone is very well dressed. I enjoy all the costumes in Western and modern. And like when you said 1966, I believe was when it was made, and they were referencing 1964, or that I had already in my head when I saw what they were wearing, I was like, well, that's 1960s. And it was just so beautifully done, classic that. So I will definitely praise it for that.
From Martin Graham's Junior's book, The Time Tunnel, A History of the Television Programme, the writers Bob and Wanda Duncan were paid $4,000 for their story and the first and final draft of the screenplay. Producer Jerry Briskin wrote on October 11, 1966, to Irwin Allen, proposing the following changes to the first draft. In scenes 43 to 45, eliminate Sentry falling off platform. Also eliminate other fights in these scenes and just have soldiers stopping Tony from doing anything further by pointing their guns at him and threatening his life. At the same time, Rainison does not get blown off the platform, but staggers down the stairs and finally collapses. Likewise, there was also suggestion that the three Mexicans that Bowie fights are now reduced to one Mexican who is shot by Bowie, but fires and kills Bowie before he drops, or indeed Bowie. So again, lots of sort of challenges that again were being worked through the system, etc. We mentioned obviously some of the historical challenges there. Let's see if we can find a few positives. I mean, Jenny, is the acting the only positive you can find about this, or is it a case of I feel as though my childhood has been wrecked? I'm going to have to watch the other 27 episodes of the Time Tunnel and actually just review them, because I think you quite enjoyed Rendezvous with Yesterday, the original pilot of the Time Tunnel. Less inclined to support another one we looked at in the Time Tunnel. But anyway, over to you.
I'd have to agree with Kathy that all the costumes are fabulous as well. Yeah, I think, as I say, for me, it's just an issue. Obviously, it's done on a bit of a budget as well, and I think that's a little bit obvious. I think with this episode, there was a lot of stuff at the end that was stock footage, probably, where they had all the historical side, and I actually felt that it was, everybody knows, well, a lot of people know the history, and it would have been nice if they'd actually concentrated a little bit more on the actual plot that involved the two actors. As I say, I just felt there was lots of things about it where it seemed to meander off onto a little bit of a sort of subplot line, and then that suddenly came to an end and you never heard anything about it again. Yeah. And
Interesting
you know,
mention.
and obviously, is it, I'm even hoping, is it Doug or Tony that well, one minute he's like virtually knocked out and he's got fuzzy eyes and he can't see anything, and then he seems
Concussion.
to
It
make
was
a mi
concussion.
he made a miraculous recovery.
Has to be pointed out that again, another lovely line was the notion of I've seen men with this whole system. Sometimes they survive. And sometimes they lapse into a coma and die, which needed a pause just to actually impact that, because that was clearly the words of Rainison, when speaking about obviously the challenges faced by Doug Phillips, who again subsequent episodes he actually gets brainwashed into believing he's a Nazi in the World War II episode, whilst of course in the opening sequence of and the trailer for Night of the Long Knives, Tony is actually shot. So I mean, these time two American scientists, Tony Newman and Doug Phillips, are going through the ringer, and I can only imagine that somehow, in terms of traveling, as they magically retain their clothing, or indeed, what's not to love about the turtleneck sweater that is modelled by James Darren's character of Tony, they clearly might have some restorative time tunnel line that comes in into play with respect to that. Kathy, the Mexican bandito, who basically says, keep quiet, and has a gag over obviously Tony, etc., for leading him into the general's office, where conveniently Tony manages to actually escape by fooling the generalissimo that he's actually helping him out with respect to the layout of the Alamo, whilst obviously eyeing up the spare sword that was actually left there, which enabled him to actually make a very daring and bold escape. Any thoughts on the sort of way the narrative proceeded for that aspect of the B story, shall we say?
Yeah, actually, that was really getting my attention, because I thought I was about to walk into a situation where the time travelers, Doug and Tony, were going to be the fixed point in time as to why the Alamo happened. I thought that could be a potential ending because of a situation like this, making deals with the enemy, and that could be the reason. Because technically, he was being accused of being a spy, and he kind of becomes one. So I thought, oh, that's an interesting direction. But as it happened, I was these that's the thing. The escape lost me. It happened so quickly. I mean, obviously, one way or another, something was going to happen like that. But I just I think I but I will say I did like the actor who played the kidnapper. Is he actually Mexican? Do we know who he is?
I'm not sure whether he was actually Mexican, but we can find out literally within the system here, as far as we can actually find during them using the magic of IMDb. He might have been Alberto. No, he might have been Alberto Monte, the villain from that point of view. He doesn't appear to have actually had a line. Captain Rodriguez, I should say, was played by Rodolfo Hoyas Jr. But I'm not sure about Alberto Monte. All we actually can record about Alberto Monte was that he was born on the 23rd of February 1926 and died on the 19th of February 2008. But he was known for a variety of other aspects, so we'd have to drill a bit deeper in terms of that. We're
Well,
approaching.
Monte is a Spanish surname, so
Well, there we
potentially.
are. But exactly, that could well be the setup that we've actually got there. We'll double check that.
Representation.
Yeah, exactly. It sort of adds that quality to the whole system. Favorite characters. I'm going to actually give a plug for Elizabeth Rogers as Mrs. Rainison, because I feel that her desperate acting scenario that was in play there was very positive. And of course, she would go on to appear in a couple of episodes of Star Trek as Lieutenant Palmer, where Nichelle Nichols wasn't able to actually take over communications from that side of things. So that's my line. Kathy, what about yourself? Who's your favorite character for this particular episode?
I would like to give an honorable mention to the Corn and the Platform. Top two honorable mentions. They really served a role. Truly, without them, we wouldn't have a story. So, and then I think my preferred actor, you know, maybe I'm going to go with the kidnapper. Maybe I'm going with him. I feel like, yeah, he added a little bit of spice. It was fun. I enjoyed. Much more than Santa or the captain.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't actually see Santa Ana. We just hear that he's actually out there.
Right, the mention of.
And
right.
Also, there seemed to be a blurring in the pronunciation between was it Santa Ana or was it Santana? Was he actually going to break into a new sort of a Mexican musical side of things? No, I'm obviously being foolish on this side of things. Jenny, any favorite character for yourself?
And I cannot remember his name, the guy with the wife in the blue. Who was helping?
Oh yeah,
I liked him. I thought he was good. I liked it because he kind of played the role that he played, where he's being told about that they're, you know, what's going to happen in the future. But he didn't kind of go, oh my gosh, you know. I thought he played it very well without overdoing it.
So it's thumbs up for Captain Rainison, played by John Lupton, who again provided the other. Wonderful world of helping Tony to escape by actually quite literally turning a blind eye, which again another sort of issue which I thought was a little bit difficult to kind of address, which of course when Tony leaves Doug and says, Doug, there's a rifle by your side if you can use it. He's obviously semi-conscious, giving a loaded rifle to a gentleman who is in that state, maybe not the best of ideas, but just a thought. At least when we saw him, he had made a miraculous recovery. So maybe using American notions, Kathy, it is the healing power of the shotgun that can effectively help people, you know, work through that whole process and therefore hold people to ransom and various other things. Unfortunately, the sniper who was sent in to actually shoot Doug missed completely and just hit the bag of grain, basically, which was, I would have thought, you know, perhaps not the best of times, but what the hey. We've reached the stage where we need to actually start considering numbers on this side of things. Or should I actually just leave with that classic quote, everything is in the right place, but the proportions are wrong. Everything is in the right place, but the proportions are wrong. Surely
yeah,
that's epic.
How I feel.
An epic from the point of view of Bob and Wanda Duncan. Let's turn to Jenny first. What is your score for this particular episode?
God, I think I'm going to give it 4.
And Kathy?
I think I'm going to give it a 4.
All right. So clearly Jessica Burtis would need to work overtime to actually put some positivity on this. We may be able to find out what she thinks in the fullness of time. Or then again, we may be not, because we'll have Dmitri Tiomkin coming through. And who knows where Pamela Sue Mann would have actually gone. We will also find that out, especially given that Jerry Leonard has played with David Bowie in times past. Or is it David Bowie? Either way, named after the Bowie knife. I'm going to go for a 7. I'm going to go for a 7 because I think all things considered, and I can understand there was a time in my life where I would have given it a 4, but now I would actually say it merits a 7, purely and simply because I used it with, I suggested several students who didn't know about the Alamo, and they were not aware of the Alamo. They had no idea that the Alamo was ever a thing. So I raised that, but
that's
also
it
led me to rediscover Davy Crockett and, of course, the King of the Wild Frontier, even though on the Disney Plus channel that does have lots of warnings now about the representation issues and so on, to the extent that I honestly thought I was accessing forbidden fruit. But still, that's another line.
I want this man locked up in the storeroom and see that he talks to no one.
Thank you.
Next week, as far as Resonance Rewind is concerned, time is still of the essence, but it's different timelines as we actually explore the 24th century and the existence or otherwise of Tasha Yar in Star Trek The Next Generation, Yesterday's Enterprise. Until we reach that stage, we simply say to Jenny Bill and Kathy Manso, thank you, and keep on resonating. Thank you.
Look at the way you look.
Well, we've just heard Dmitri Tiomkin's theme to, of course, the John Wayne Alamo. And we promised earlier in the production, of course, for Resonance Rewind, that we would try through the mists of time to get a lock, to get a lock on to one of our key contributors, of course. And thanks to, obviously, Ray Swain and Anne McGregor, and, of course, General Haywood Cook, with a few explosions, they've managed to actually bring to the fore Jessica Virtus. So you can share, Jessica, your thoughts on this episode of The Time Tunnel, of course, entitled The Alamo.
Yeah, I don't think we've watched The Time Tunnel before.
We have seen twice, actually, Jessica. We saw Rendezvous with Yesteryear, which was when they actually went back in time at the very start of the series to the Titanic and managed to fail to represent that. And then, of course, we also had the Attack on Pearl Harbor episode where Tony Newman was desperately trying to rescue his father without success. So those two American scientists have been weaving in and out of the entire history of Resonance Rewind so far.
I think, so this was, I liked this one a bit more. I think I tend to, so I've already mentioned that time travel is not my usual forte, but I like it when they go back further. I think it's more interesting when they're kind of pre-20th century. I think that's the most interesting time travel experience with shows. So I thought this was interesting, especially because I don't remember seeing many shows focusing on the Alamo as much. So I thought it was a really cool setting to have. And I like Doug and Tony. So I think that they're fun characters to follow. But I think that this one also was very emotional. It sounds like with the Titanic one as well, they cover very heavy events. They don't tend to go back in time to, you know, like the cheery things that happen. They kind of go back to the big conflicts. So this one was sad. I think having the wife kind of crying over her husband who had fallen was especially sad. So I think that this one wasn't one of the more fun time travel adventures like you would see in Doctor Who or something. It was much more emotional, which I guess is interesting to see for a real life event. But I liked it. I think it was my favorite then of the Time Tunnel. I liked it more than the Titanic episode.
I mean, it's interesting in terms of the historical facts, of course. As we said at the start of the piece, the Alamo is very much rooted in American history. Mm-hmm. And yet, as we've said, it's been rewritten, revised in so many ways. Did Davy Crockett die at the Alamo? Did he die after the Alamo, before the Alamo? Was Colonel Travis as much of a stickler to the rules as he was made out to be? And of course, Jim Bowie, or Bowie, depending on the pronunciation that you actually take on that line. Again, how did he actually meet his end and so on? And was General Santa Anna such a villain as he was being portrayed and so on? I mean, even the actual critical guidelines for the censors that were given to the production company at the time said, don't make out the Mexicans to be stereotypes in this. And that was obviously 1966 when this episode was actually filmed from that point of view.
I would say, like, it's interesting because I really learned about the Alamo mostly from an American perspective. So it'd be interesting to learn about it from a perspective of like a Mexican document or like any records or teachings on that. I think it'd be interesting to kind of compare and contrast, because I think since everyone died, it kind of inspired a lot of people to join the Texas support. They kind of it polarized people quite a lot. Understandably, I feel like I'm worried if it was that extreme, or the Texas Revolution, if something happened that was that extreme. It makes sense why it's remembered so much. But yeah, it was very sad seeing the general when he was saying that he had to go back to be with his men. So it definitely portrayed him as, like you said, a stickler to the rules, but also like extremely selfless to a fault, where they all died and he was willing to kind of go back and die with them, rather than kind of try and like alter anything. But that was the sadder part of it. I wonder if the general was truly like that in real life.
Well, again, the interest on Colonel Bowie, officers don't do manual labor in this outfit, as indeed Colonel Travers, let's get his rank correct, actually said. So he was clearly actually keen to produce that. And obviously the fact that he said he was a man of his word, where he did actually take the concussed, and he did make a remarkable recovery from concussion. I presume it was concussion when he basically landed on a rock on his head, etc., that Doug Phillips effectively went out to see Colonel Bowie, only to find that basically Colonel Bowie had already passed, and all he saw was basically Colonel Bowie's corpse at that stage. So again, interesting stuff from that. It seems, Jessica, as though we're kind of more aligned than I think Kathy was with us on this one. Kathy, who of course has visited the Alamo, and as she said, was very much in the center of the whole town. So it's an interesting way in which that was portrayed. So
Yeah.
not, as we said, not historically accurate by any means, but at the same time, apparently using alternate realities for appreciating
Yeah.
that. Let's talk characters though, Jessica. I mean, a classic line with respect to Residence Rewind. We've spoken about Colonel William Barrett Travers, played by a Rhodes Reason there. Haven't really spoken too much about Colonel Jim Bowie, played by Jim Davis. Of course, Bowie was the surname from which a certain pop star called David Bowie actually always said he took his name when he changed his name from David Jones to David Bowie. So a bit of cultural resonance there. But who for you actually stood out as being favorite characters in this particular episode?
I think Doug and Tony, I think, are sweet characters. I think they're not the two that stand out to me the most when they're surrounded by so many historical figures, but I think now I don't know if I would have liked this man as like a historical figure, but I think the general in this was very interesting, or the colonel, I think he was very interesting in this. Just his kind of his sense of duty was very interesting. But I also liked the figure who the character who was at the base of the time tunnel, who was trying to inform him of what happened.
Would
If
that
it
be
was,
Lieutenant General Haywood Kirk, played by Whit Bissell?
I think so. Yes, he had the hat, the nice snazzy hat. I think that he was also very interesting. So I think both of them.
Interesting. Okay, Elizabeth Rogers, I think, still, I stay with my vote for her, playing Mrs. Rainison. So I think she did a very brave role. Of being the nurse who effectively was again rescued apparently by the Mexican doctor who Dr. Armandez otherwise she would presumably have been whisked away for what sort of nefarious purposes by the Mexican soldiers and so on. So I'll still stick with respect to that. Okay, so interesting from that perspective, as we've already said, the next time we are back, we will be looking at the Star Trek: The Next Generation episode from season three, entitled "Yesterday's Enterprise," which also curiously deals with alternate timelines. Then, Jessica, you'd be pleased to know we kind of avoid our time travel to a certain extent for a few weeks. But let's talk numbers for this one, Jessica. What are you going to go for as far as this season? Well. So season th episode 13, season one, episode 13 of The Time Tunnel. Where are you going to score it?
I think I'm going to give it a 7 because I did like it. I think that I feel like I want to go back and watch them in chronological order, because I wonder if my feelings on the Titanic episode have changed. But I think I like this one more. I did enjoy it, and I think that having seen it made me want to go back and read more about the Alamo. I think that's kind of the one of the beauties of this show, is it kind of makes you want to go back and learn a little bit more, because all these figures were real people. So it's interesting to kind of see how it actually was in real life, without Doug and Tony, unfortunately.
Well, we will continue swirling through the infinite mists and corridors of time, space, and television programs. Extraordinary, of course, that Jessica and myself obviously totally aligned there. I'd also scored it a 7, versus, of course, the somewhat negative 4s that Jenny and Kathy actually provided. But
Oh,
still, we have to actually keep the positivity going. That's my line on this side of things. So for now, the immortal words emerge as ever. Keep on resonating.
Time Tunnel!